What Russia could do is stage some kind of Ukrainian attack.
On guard against Moscow's next step. It's Friday, February 18th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, energy prices escalate as Russia-Ukraine tensions do the same. Indonesia takes on China in the South China Sea. The fate of Afghan women under the Taliban. Helping Afghan refugees in Virginia. And a Beijing Olympics update. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris is on her way to Munich, Germany, where officials say she will focus on consulting with allies about the Russia-Ukraine crisis. Washington is warning that Russia has added as many as 7,000 additional troops to the border. This after Moscow said it actually had begun withdrawing some troops from the Ukrainian border. Henry Ridgewell reports.
This is the image Russia wants to show to the world. The Ministry of Defense released several videos purporting to show tanks and troops withdrawing from the Ukrainian border region after completing military drills. Moscow has mocked Western claims that it would invade Ukraine this week and maintains it has no plans to conduct any such operation. Meeting German Chancellor Olaf Scholz in Moscow Tuesday, Russia's President Vladimir Putin denied he was seeking conflict. He said, "Do we want it or not? Of course not. That is why we have offered our proposals to start the negotiation process, which should lead to an agreement of providing equal security for everybody, including our country." German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said, "It's now about solving this crisis peacefully in a courageous and decisive way. It is a good sign that we are hearing some of the troops are being withdrawn. We hope much more signs will follow." But details of the Russian withdrawal are scarce. Footage posted to social media Tuesday, verified by Reuters, appeared to show field hospitals being transported towards the Ukrainian border. British Defence Minister Ben Wallace.
"We saw large field hospitals being built in a number of districts around Ukraine, and indeed we saw continued deployment from holding areas into more forward areas."
US intelligence officials have warned that Russia could stage a false flag attack in the rebel-held Donbass region. Some experts agree. Maria Avdeva is from the European Expert Association in Kiev.
"What Russia could do is stage some kind of Ukrainian attack and then say that the Russian citizens in Donbass need to be protected and use the Russian military for that."
Under the looming threat of invasion, Ukrainians took to the streets Wednesday in a day of unity. Kiev resident Olena Kotenko said, "Our power is that we understand the situation we are in, and our power lies in the fact we became stronger than we were in 2014. Fellow Kiev resident Yuri Maestrenko said, "Russia will not leave us in peace. That's why we have to always be ready for it." And Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky posted this message on social media. "Nobody will love our home as much as we do," he said, "and nobody can defend our home as we can." Meanwhile, in the east, Ukrainian forces are preparing to defend their homeland. The rhetoric may have cooled slightly, but the threat of war remains high. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Beijing Olympics get political with Taiwan Uyghur questions. UK pledges $34 million to enhance Indo-Pacific security. Myanmar says it won't attend ASEAN meeting. COVID hampers Tonga's volcano recovery. Satellite images suggest resumption of North Korean uranium enrichment. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Chinese President Xi Jinping spoke with French President Emmanuel Macron Wednesday concerning the situation in Ukraine. He called for dialogue to settle the matter. It is the first time Xi has made public remarks on the conflict since he met with Russian President Vladimir Putin on February 4th at the opening of the Beijing Winter Olympics. At the time, President Xi Jinping expressed support for Moscow's opposition to expansion by the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. A Pentagon spokesperson has since told reporters that Washington considers the statement issued after the meeting a, quote, tacit endorsement of a Russian invasion of Ukraine. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin was asked about Beijing's position on Ukraine earlier this week.
Under the leadership of the two heads of state of China and Russia, both sides have always been committed to developing long-term, good neighborly friendship and mutually beneficial cooperation on the basis of non-alliance, non-confrontation, and not targeting against any third country. The two sides have always adhered to building a new type of international relations featuring mutual respect, fairness, justice, and win-win cooperation. The contribution of the two countries to regional and international peace and development is widely recognized and indisputable. China calls for balanced and fair treatment of the security concerns and initiatives of relevant countries, resolving differences through dialogue and consultation, and promoting global strategic balance and stability. We urge relevant parties to stop making remarks that escalate tensions. It is immoral and very dangerous to seek political gains by advocating confrontation and spreading false information.
With Washington threatening intense financial sanctions against Russia if it invades Ukraine, Moscow could turn to Beijing to provide economic support. But China has long taken a foreign policy position that it does not endorse any nation's intervention in another country's affairs. For example, Beijing has never recognized Russia's annexation of Crimea. At the same time, China has its own security interests in the region. Ukraine is a key nation in Beijing's signature Belt and Road Initiative, designed to elevate Chinese trade routes from Asia to Europe. Beijing has also invested heavily in gas and oil resources in the Central Asian nations of Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and Turkmenistan, all of which could be impacted by conflict in the region. European countries, meantime, are also concerned that the flow of gas from Russia will be affected. Oksana Bedratenko looks at how Russia's actions against Ukraine may affect Europe's energy sector. Anna Rice narrates her story.
About 40% of the natural gas supplied to European countries like France, Poland, Germany, and Italy comes from Russia. Western powers are concerned Russia will create a pretext to disrupt the flow of gas moving to Europe through Ukraine.
What I do expect would be what I just said, some local incidents, possibly an attack on the Ukrainian pipeline. That's quite likely. And it would also give Russia an excuse to extricate itself from the long-term contract, the transmission contract that it has.
The U.S. has alleged that Russia has a plan to stage an attack and use it as a reason to invade Ukraine. Russia has strongly denied the charge. Experts suspect Russia plans to use its energy supply as leverage to divide Europe. They point to disagreement in Europe over Russia's Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline, which runs from Russia to Germany under the Baltic Sea. The project has been completed, but must still get the approval of regulators in Germany and the European Union. Deborah Kagan, a former U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, says Russia's strategy is clear.
They're clearly, no question, using this as a political weapon. to threaten Europe, and especially threaten those countries who they believe might have a role in approving Nord Stream 2. So Russia's ultimate goal is to get the European Union to change its antitrust rules to allow Russia to not only provide the gas, but own the pipelines and own the type of pressure and the amount of gas that goes through those pipelines.
The US and Europe have warned Russia about the consequences of its aggression toward Ukraine and say sanctions for any military action in the Ukraine will include Nord Stream 2.
With regard to Nord Stream 2, we continue to have very strong and clear conversations with our German allies, and I want to be clear with you today. If Russia invades Ukraine, one way or another, Nord Stream 2 will not move forward.
In order to help Europe deal with a potential gas crisis, the United States has approached Qatar and other energy-producing states about providing gas to Europe if Russia cuts off their supply. The International Energy Agency says U.S. exports of liquefied natural gas, or LNG, to Europe in the last quarter of 2021 jumped 40% from last year's totals. But experts say that won't be able to completely make up for the loss of Russian LNG in the short term.
In January, imports of LNG in Europe have been almost at record levels, and half of those were, in fact, from the U.S. So there has been a lot of U.S. LNG coming to Europe.
Deborah Kagan believes, however, that a disruption of Russian supplies would directly affect not only Europe, but the U.S. as well.
The United States, while it is telling Europe to cut off Russian gas, is importing about 18 million barrels a month of Russian oil into the United States.
For their part, European countries say they will continue to look for alternative sources of energy to replace their reliance on Russian gas. For Oksana Bedratenko, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, an exclusive interview with one of the U.S. Senate's biggest backers of Afghan women. Happening now in Asia. Anti-junta resistance groups in Myanmar say they plan to increase military operations and guerrilla warfare in cities, despite difficulties in obtaining weapons and ammunition. Ethnic armies and young people also have joined the resistance. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. The U.S. and China continue to spar on freedom of navigation in the South China Sea, with Beijing claiming much of the islands and waters in the area as its own. One major regional power has been mostly quiet on the dispute so far, but that may be changing. VOA's Yuni Salim reports in this report narrated by Nova Perwadi.
Indonesia has often taken a soft approach to China's territorial claims in the South China Sea, but Indonesia has recently begun asserting its rights in the region. It has been drilling in offshore waters China considers disputed, and joint military exercises with U.S. forces in August prompted a letter of protest from Beijing leaders.
Clearly, the standoff last year over Indonesia's drilling in the Tuna Block has really frustrated Indonesia, and it's giving leeway for Indonesia to explore sub-regional diplomacy, meeting outside of ASEAN with the other claimants, which is something that Indonesia has not wanted to do.
The Tuna Block is part of the waters off Natuna Islands, which have become a relatively recent flashpoint. Indonesia considers it part of its exclusive economic zone, while Beijing considers the region part of their traditional fishing waters. Like many nations in the Indo-Pacific, Indonesia now finds itself regularly fending off Chinese fishing fleets and coast guard in the disputed waters.
I think China is serious about this. I think Indonesia, being the farthest away from China, probably has experienced some of the least coercion. But quite clearly, China is intending to throw its weight around.
Faced with these continuing challenges from China, Indonesia is now reaching out to five fellow members of the regional grouping ASEAN, or the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines, Singapore, and Vietnam, to coordinate their coast guards in the face of Chinese encroachment. But in pursuing a tougher line against China's territorial ambitions off Natuna, Indonesia risks alienating its largest trading partner and second largest source of foreign investment.
And their number one concern about China is maintaining good enough relations that Chinese investment flows in to infrastructure in particular, which is Jishoui's top priority.
It's a similar balancing act for the five countries seeking greater cooperation with Indonesia on maritime security, as well as for Indo-Pacific nations in general.
China's material capabilities are so overmatched for most countries. I think they tend to pick their fights, and they tend to stand up for themselves when it's a really core issue. But on some smaller issues, they find ways like perhaps not highlighting it, not making it a public issue, and trying to deal with it quietly.
A meeting of coast guards from six affected ASEAN members was scheduled for February, but it's been postponed till at least March, reportedly due to COVID. For Yuni Salim, Nova Purwadi, VOA News.
You can read and see much more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
Happening now in Asia, a wedding celebration turned tragic in northern India when 13 women and girls plunged to their deaths after a concrete slab they were singing and dancing on broke apart over an abandoned well. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. This week saw the six-month anniversary of the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan, a place where thousands of American troops, along with numerous allied forces, spent much of the past 20 years. VOA spoke to U.S. Senator Gene Shaheen about the anniversary and the New Hampshire Democrats' particular advocacy for the situation of Afghan women who have been losing rights gained in the years during the U.S. military presence.
Like all Americans, I'm very distressed at the reports we see coming out of Afghanistan with the plight of women and girls in the country. And so we sent a letter to President Biden urging him to take any steps available to us to try and come up with a plan to address what's happening in the country. And he's appointed two people. I've had a chance to meet with one of those people, Stephanie Foster, to work with a task force to develop a plan to see how we can help Afghan women and girls and Afghan families as they're dealing with this humanitarian crisis. And so it's very hard to see how the country can thrive if women don't have a role in the country, if they're not able to work. As we know, over the last 20 years, women have been very engaged, both in going to school, university, in serving in jobs and helping move the economy of the country. And that's going to be critical if Afghanistan is going to have any chance of succeeding under the Taliban.
Senator Shaheen also weighed in on President Biden's decision last week to split the Afghan frozen assets among the families of the September 11th attacks. Afghans protested against this decision, arguing they too are victims of terrorism.
Well, I think it's been unfortunate that the situation is denying the Afghans support that's needed right now at a time when the country is really facing a humanitarian disaster. And unfortunately, that money is going to be held up for some time in the future, so it wouldn't be available immediately. But we had a hearing last week in the Foreign Relations Committee in the Senate, and one of the people who was there was David Miliband, who's been working on these issues of trying to provide assistance, trying to get funding that has been tied up in the West to the Afghans so that it can help mitigate the disaster. And I think most of us who have tried to be supportive of Afghanistan recognize that it's a very difficult balance right now, because we want to see humanitarian aid get to the people of Afghanistan, but we don't want to see the Taliban benefit from those dollars and be able to use them for corrupt purposes. So the international aid community that's been operating in Afghanistan for a very long time needs to be engaged in trying to ensure that those funds get out to people who need it so that the country can continue to operate.
The U.S. has yet to recognize the Taliban as the rightful official government of Afghanistan. Making headlines in Asia, the Australian government's tourism department is attempting to lure visitors back for a longer stay in the country with the message, "Don't go small, go Australia." Australia opens its borders to vaccinated travelers on February 21st. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Two local nonprofit organizations are helping newly arrived Afghan families to resettle in Northern Virginia. VOA's Zila Nouri has more.
Every afternoon, volunteers in Springfield, Virginia, gather to coordinate and distribute furniture to refugees settling in the area. The furniture is for newly arrived Afghan refugees. The nonprofit group Northern Virginia Resettling Afghan Families Together, or RAFT, has been helping refugees in this area for years.
So when the crisis began in August, we felt terrible like everybody else. We were trying to find something positive that we could do. And the thing that made the most sense was to get together with our neighbors and people in our community and figure out the best way to welcome new Afghans arriving here from the crisis.
Zohra is one of the tens of thousands of Afghans who were evacuated by the United States when Kabul fell. She lives in Virginia now, and volunteers are helping furnish her new apartment. Zohra, who asks not to be filmed, says some immigrants must sleep on the floor for days, and sometimes even weeks.
I was in a military base for 55 days, and after I was in a hotel. A week later, I found a place and moved to an empty apartment. But because our apartment was totally empty, I reached out to this agency and I told them my apartment's empty and could I at least get some furniture so that I can settle.
Marjan Darab is a volunteer with Fresh Start, a nonprofit organization run by Afghan Americans.
This is a personal task for us. This is personal. We like to make connections with these families and these individuals and, you know, kind of get to know them and let them know that, you know, our community here in the Northern Virginia area is helpful. We're here for them. We're supportive of them.
About 60 volunteers help furnish at least two apartments per week. Some volunteers devote more than 40 hours every week assisting newly arrived refugees.
And so I started off by giving a ride to a young woman, a young girl, to be tested for English proficiency for high school. And that led to my doing about 40 to 60 hours of work a week as a volunteer with them. Everything from providing rides to figuring out what kind of furniture people need in their apartments.
Volunteers with both nonprofit groups also help newly arrived Afghans get a driving license, laptops to learn English, and register their children in schools. Zila Nouri, VOA News, Springfield, Virginia.
At the Beijing Olympics heading into competition today, Norway leads the medals table with 14 gold medals, 7 silver, and 8 bronze. Germany holding on to second in the official table ranked by gold medals. They have 10 golds along with 7 silvers and 5 bronzes. The U.S. is holding on to third place with 8 golds, 8 silvers, and 5 bronze. Host China has moved down to fifth place with 7 gold, 4 silver, and 2 bronze medals. Russian athletes are in ninth place with 5 golds, 9 silvers, and 12 bronze medals. The at times controversial women's figure skating competition has now come to a close with Russian skater Kamila Valieva, who tested positive for a banned heart drug in December but was still cleared to skate on Monday,
finished fourth after a mistaken laden free skate. Her teammates Anna Sherbakova and Alexandra Tursova won gold and silver, with Japan's Kaori Sakamoto winning bronze. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. Enjoy the day.